So this FAQ is a bit of an indulgence, I've got to say immediately. It's not a pressing political matter, and I also have to admit it's not actually a question that anybody's ever asked me, and probably never asked you either, which is, what does a socialist high street look like? Now, to give you a bit of background on this, years ago I tried repeatedly to create videos on socialism. I don't mean on the socialist case as such, I mean on socialism itself and what it might look like in practice. Now, I know that some members don't believe in doing that for all sorts of, you know, very sound reasons, but it's always seemed to me that if you want people to have a clear image of what you're talking about, it's best to draw them a picture. Well, anyway, I wrote script after script. Some of them were short, some of them were real epics. The only one that ever got made was the one that's on the website now, which, well, we filmed it in the morning. I wrote it in a day and it cost 40 quid to make. But it was only ever meant to be a proof of principle, i.e. the principle being that socialists could actually make videos, a principle which at that time was rather an open question. But the good stuff was supposedly going to come later on. But to my everlasting disappointment, the sequels turned out to be impossible to film for one practical reason or another. One in particular was a script called Kitchen Communism, where the focus was a community kitchen. Now, it was my conceit that just as a kitchen is traditionally the focus of a house, the community kitchen would be the focus of socialism, not just in everyday catering terms, but as a kind of working analogy for global socialist production. The conceit also extended to the word focus itself, which is from the Latin for fire. I called it kitchen communism rather than kitchen socialism, just because I like the alliteration. Anyway, I organised a local cafe kitchen near where I live. It was all set up for filming. I had the proprietor's agreement. I had the kitchen staff, they were willing to go about their business during the takes and make the place look generally busy. That was fine, but the film couldn't just be confined to a kitchen. There was the question of, after all, where all the kitchen supplies came from, for a start, the food and so forth, and the energy supplies. And of course, there was the question where people went after they left the kitchen, you know, what sort of work they would do in the community. So at some point, the camera was going to have to go outside to the wider world. Otherwise, it would all be a bit of a cop-out. Well, obviously, we couldn't film in a modern capitalist street. So I talked to some sketch artists who would be able to sketch in urban surroundings as I kind of walked through them for the camera. Well, that was perfect. I thought, that'll work. All I need to do is tell them what to draw. And that's when I came unstuck, because I couldn't picture what a town or a city centre street in socialism would look like. Once I took away all the banks, betting shops, charity stores, commercial outlets, once I took all that out of the picture, I couldn't see what was left. I just had a street full of empty premises. I didn't know what I could turn them into. I mean, I could imagine a bar, maybe, or a pub and a hairdresser's. That was about it. Weirdly, though, we're seeing something like this happening right now as the high street changes out of recognition because online shopping is killing off a lot of traditional shops. Where I live, there's a restaurant or a cafe or a coffee bar about every 10 steps. But, I mean, it's pretty obvious that none of these are going to be sustainable in the long run. And even in socialism, where money is not an issue, you know, there's only so much food you can eat and coffee you can drink, and there's only so many times you can have your hair cut. So, anyway, today is like an invitation to be indulgent and speculate about what uses a socialist high street might be put to. It's not just a question of leisure distractions, you know, amusements like bowling alleys or cinemas. I'm not even sure that socialists would be all that interested in meaningless distractions. you know, like in capitalism, because meaningless distractions only, I would have thought, only have a value when work is also meaningless. It's a deeper question than that. It's a question about the reasons why we socialise in the first place and what we would want an urban sense to do for us. So I couldn't sketch in a high street in socialism when I tried. And I thought it was worth asking today for ideas about how we, whether we could sketch a high street in socialism. I mean, if we could, maybe I'd be able to make that film after all. So any suggestions, any ideas?
I'll kick off. I can't see why it would be that much different to the high street now. Obviously, no banks. And as you said, Paddy, nothing that involves money. But we need to buy food. So there will be, let's call them supermarkets. But, you know, you go and get your food when you need it. And it will all be on shelves, blah, blah, blah. In the same way that it is now, only you get what you need and you don't pay. We all need to wear clothes, so there'll be clothes stores, but and other stores where you, electrical goods and all the things that we need now, except for that there wouldn't be these cereal stores, so you wouldn't have the Marks and Spencers on every street. You probably have much more, well, I'd say niche, but it's only niche because it's only niche now. But you'll have much more individualistic and individual stores. I mean, some people like to knit and sew and et cetera, et cetera. And I think you could just go in and craft all these different craft things for your home that would be individually made, that people take pride in making, and you wouldn't have to pay for anything. Obviously, no money's involved. So you'd have clothes stores, you'd have supermarkets, food stores. I mean, supermarkets might not be big, vast places. They might be on a smaller scale. There might be, you'd probably have a lot of fresh food stalls, like a market type thing. Because I think once we deglobalize and once we become localized, we'll have local produce and local craftspeople. Obviously, cinema, theatre will be available to everyone. So I think every high street or every local area will have a cinema and a theatre. Parks, but obviously that's not on the high street. But like you said, communal kitchens for those people that, you know, don't have people at home or can't cook or don't want to cook from scratch, and cafes, why not? All right, you don't want to one every 2 minutes, but somewhere where, or just and local meeting, for instance, there, instead of a town hall, it could be just a social area where you go and maybe, you know, you can get a coffee or a tea there, sit. Library, and you'll have a library. So I can't see, Paddy, that it will be that much different to what we have now, except for there probably won't be as many, you know, clothing stores. Probably people won't be that interested in fashion. I don't know. Who knows? But I can't see that it would be that much different. But it will be nice to just go in and, you know, not having to think about whether you can afford stuff or not. Anyway, that's my two pennies.
I was thinking exactly the same as Carla, actually. I don't think it would be that different, apart from you don't have to pay. Produce would probably be more local, but I mean, there obviously wouldn't be ridiculous competition, 20 different kinds of toothbrush and all the rest of it, so it'd be less. I mean, there wouldn't be shops selling exactly the same thing, but I don't see it that different for the day. Maybe less cinemas and less, as you're sort of putting it, ways of forgetting yourself, but yeah, I don't see it would be that different either, really. I think Carl was right there.
Okay, all right. This is the point, I think I started with this point, where my first assumption was, okay, it would be pretty similar, you know, why not? If you take the money out of the equation, and, yeah, Malcolm, I agree, you know, absolutely right, of course, you wouldn't have all these shops selling 20 different versions of the same thing. So, I mean, that's a given. But I started to think about this. Now, you might say that all I was doing, well, I was just overthinking the problem. That could be true. But when I started to think about markets for fresh food and, you know, supermarkets or mini marts or something like that, you know, forget the money aspect, but, you know, sort of help yourself to food type thing. This is when I went back to the communal kitchen idea. And I thought, well, just what is the logic in a lot of people living in their own little personal individual box with their own little personal individual kitchen, doing their own personal individual cooking, which, let's face it, most people on the whole would rather not do, or at least certainly not to have to do every day. And so it seemed to me that the whole logic of the existence of supermarkets, markets, of food outlets existed on the premise that people did their own cooking, and this was a central thing that my idea was challenging. People wouldn't do their own cooking by and large. They could if they wanted to, but not all. But you could kit out an extra room in all houses if you took the kitchen out of it. And kitchens are a fairly modern phenomenon in modern society. In ancient societies, houses didn't have kitchens. In ancient Rome, nobody had a private kitchen unless you were rich. People ate out, and they used their home environment just as a dormitory. So it doesn't follow at all that we would have our own. We would all behave exactly in the same way as we do today. And this is the point, and this is why I say, you know, you might say I'm overthinking it, but it seemed to me that if there was a change in social behaviour, that would change what you saw on the high street. And I didn't think you would see all these mini marts and markets and supermarkets. And going further, you could have maybe a local meeting centre, like a town hall, if people wanted to discuss ideas or the political issues of the day. But nowadays, you know, you can do all that online. There is no particular reason to do it in a physical space. Similarly, libraries, well, you know, there are digital libraries now. Even capitalism's getting rid of its physical libraries. Why would you have physical library books in socialism? It doesn't really make sense. Clothes, well, again, you know, people in the pandemic, when the restrictions were reduced, people queued round the block to get into Primark to buy cheap, crappy clothes that they would wear twice and then throw away. We wouldn't be doing that in socialism. More likely, we would have clothes libraries. So you could, you know, get out the clothes you wanted for a party and take them back the next day. I didn't really think that there would be a big outlet, a big demand for personal clothes in the same way as you get clothes shops in capitalism. Similarly with electrical goods, again, you know, how much do people want their own version of something? How many people need to have their own power drill, their own circular saw, their own tools of any sort? How much would people actually have to have their own fully equipped home space? These are questions I asked myself, and the more I questioned the way we live now, the more my virtual high street started to depopulate. I do like Carla's idea of the craft centres, you know, places where people could go and make stuff and join in and also, you know, help themselves to pieces of art if they wanted. But I couldn't, beyond that, you know, that was one idea for I also thought of, you know, open bars where you've got bands playing and things like that into the street and things. But it didn't really quite seem enough to fill the voids I'd created.
Yeah. Think people want a social in different ways, aren't they? So, for instance, I don't think I want to eat in a place where cooking is done on a big scale. I like cooking. I like to eat particular food. I'm not sure that, you know, it can't cater for everybody. It can't have a menu in the way same way that restaurants do. So I don't see what's wrong with cooking at home. Yeah, great. Communal kitchens are a great idea. And I like the idea of tool libraries and various libraries, as in borrowing stuff that you need for the home. That makes a lot of sense. But, you know, especially where food is concerned, you know, people, as there are going to be people that are going to have to cook all this stuff for the community. And if you don't like cooking, you're not going to want to volunteer for that, are you? So I think that's a bit of a catch-22 there, because if you don't like cooking, then you're not going to volunteer to cook. And if you're not going to volunteer to cook, then who's going to cook for this community? But I think we can, you know what, we don't have to have, it doesn't have to be specific. Yet we can have communal kitchens, or we, if we choose to, you know, I'd like my little own kitchen at home. I'd like to be able to cook at home. Or, yeah, I mean, what would be quite nice would be for individuals to, you get this potluck parties type thing where someone cooks something, someone else cooks something, and you all meet up somewhere, doesn't have to be in someone's home, and you bring what you've cooked. That sort of stuff, because it's not going to, you know, it's not that you can't afford now to buy stuff and to cook it. You can afford to do that. So we can all kind of share food, but we can share food in lots of different ways, not just communal kitchens. We can share food amongst our personal friends, and you talk about every, you know, digital, but that's not very social. Doing things online is not the most social thing. So I don't really like the idea of too much of that.
There's a third way as far as eating is concerned. And what about the people who really like cooking? Have restaurants. You know, that could be all kinds of people would want to be involved. It doesn't mean they've got to be there 7 days a week. They take their turns, and maybe you'd have the menu outside. It might be, you know, Indian one day, and God knows. It could be just people who love to cook and love to cook food for people. There's no reason why we shouldn't have restaurants as well as community kitchens and your kitchen at home. That seems to me like a brilliant idea.
I think there ought to be looking at this question of cooking and the idea that people don't like to cook. I think it's a bit like the idea that people don't like to work. I think there's a distinction we need to make between work as a social pleasure and work as a tedious drudge. And I think that cooking to a lot of people is perceived as a tedious drudge, something that they just have to do in order to eat. They don't really have time to do it properly. They don't really have the background skills to do it properly. And they would rather eat out if they possibly could afford it. But they're missing out on the social pleasure of cooking. I mean, there's nothing more fun than inviting a bunch of friends to dinner. Anybody that's done that, I'm sure you've all done that. It's a terrific pleasure, and the cooking is part of that pleasure. And I think that in socialism, cooking is a social skill that you would learn as a child. I learned to cook when I was quite a small child. It's not difficult. Children can easily do it, and they enjoy learning skills that are useful to adults and to the community. So I don't think it's an issue that there would all be all these people who didn't like cooking in socialism. I think that it would be as weird to hear someone say that in socialism as to hear them say, I don't like work.
The one that said that people don't like cooking, when you first mentioned community kitchens.
And the community kitchens, I think that the way that they would work is everybody would take turns. So you can take your social pleasure in the cooking process, but you don't have to do it every day. I mean, that would become a drudge. So the idea of the communal kitchen, and incidentally, what's the difference between a communal kitchen in socialism and a restaurant? There isn't a difference. It's the same thing. people would take turns. So you could have communal kitchens with, say, regional flavours or particular styles of cooking. You could have one that specialises in, say, Italian or, Greek food or I don't know what. But and people would say, oh, I'd like to learn how to make Greek food. I'm going to go and help out in that kitchen, take turns there and learn how to make that stuff because that's really good fun and I like eating that. So it would be a place where people would congregate. You'd be, because people would eat there as well, not just the people cooking. So it'd be a really sociable environment. And that kind of goes, that's to cancel out what you're saying about, digital libraries. That's not very sociable. But reading a book is not very sociable. You just sat there on your own reading a book. Why? What difference does it make if it's a physical paper book or a digital book? It's the same process. So some things I think would be digital. Other things that would give us a reason for socialising, like I think cooking's a huge one, would be a communal activity, and we would do a lot of that. I think
there'd be opportunities for people to be learning all kinds of skills that they haven't got need for or time for currently. Things that they perhaps, thought they would love to do, but it takes time, takes money to get the tools, the equipment, and one thing or another. And whether that's, Carla mentioned, I think, sewing and handicraft skills, those sort of things. But also think about carpentry. William Morris, how lovely it is for people to be able to have all kinds of items, things of beauty that are made by people who love what they're making. They love their work, not the sort of machine, everything on a conveyor belt, moving along, getting a bit added here, a bit added there, but things that actually some kind of pride has gone into the making of it. That, for me, seems to be a wonderful idea. And I think there will be time for people to learn the skills, not necessarily to take that up as their contribution, but perhaps just because they really want to learn it and want to make these things, and we'd be happy to give them to people or make them for people who would like to have them.
And just cut in here on that, I think workplace, whether it's good food or a good carpenter, you'd need at the core of these things you'd need your skilled craftsmen, whatever it is they're doing. But I think those workplaces, the workshop, the carpenter's shop, the motor engineer, the electrical engineer, the chef, these workplaces would become social areas. People going there, they could, whether they're doing learning, contributing to something, or just sitting with a glass of tea and chatting with the blacksmith while he's working, because you're taking the urgency, the profit motive is gone. We'll have time, surely we'll have time for to enjoy life together.
Yeah, that's some really good points, actually. And I've already identified something that I think I'd an assumption I well, a hidden assumption that I think I might have been making that this conversation has brought out. The idea of sort of study centres, workshops, places that you can train at, devolve to the street level. We don't see that today. I mean, all of this is hidden, isn't it? In enlarged institutions out of town, technical colleges and universities and things like that. And perhaps a lot more of that kind of thing would be devolved to the street level. So you'd be able to kind of walk in off the street into a into a practical wood workshop or sort of mechanical workshop of some sort, or I don't know, sort of local lectures in philosophy.
Yeah, well, one of the things living in this, in many ways, very different culture out here, we have areas, industrial areas. Very seldom do you find in any industrial activity going on in the middle of a town, or even in the middle of a village. There will be a small, be an area set aside on the edge away from if you like the houses and if I put it this way, the cleaner environment. So you take your industry outside, and they're called Sana'is, and they are amazing places. I find them absolutely fascinating. I can't tell you. You have every type of tradesman you can think of. They, when you know, in before we left the UK, we were well into the disposable marketplace. Things were designed to last for so long, you threw them away. It was cheaper to buy a new one than to get the old thing repaired. When we came to Turkey, to give an example of this, we bought an old side-by-side fridge freezer with us because it was an unusual design and it was very convenient. It went under a work surface. And it lasted for a couple of years before the higher temperature caused the motor to overheat, and we happened to have a Turkish friend with us, and we said to him, "Ma, who do you know where we can get a new fridge freezer? Anything?" He said, "Why? What's the matter?" He said, "Well, this one's broken down," and he looked at us in astonishment. He said, "Well, you get it repaired." This was a novel concept to us 20 odd years ago here. Get it repaired? I mean, you can't afford that. Oh, yes, hang on a minute. He got onto his mobile phone, and about 20 minutes later, there was the sound of a putt-putt outside, and a guy had come from the neighbouring town with his lad, got off, came and had a look, a quick look. He said, "Oh, yes, the compressor has gone." He said, "I'm afraid I'll have to come back later and take the thing away to get it repaired." He said, "But looking at it, the motor that's on here," he said, "is not strong enough for the temperatures that we have out here. You need a bigger one." And so we said, "Well, whatever you need to do, do." And I tell you, it was they came that afternoon, loaded up the fridge freezer. The following day, he rang and said, "We're bringing it back. You know, are you there?" "Yes." He brought it back, put it in, and fired it up. And we said, "That's great. How much is that?" He said, "Oh, no. You don't pay me any money at the moment," he said. "We need to let it run for a bit. I'll come back tomorrow, and you can, if you're happy with it, then you can pay me then." And it cost very, very little money. Relatively speaking, the cost of his labor was very cheap, and it still is very cheap here. People don't throw stuff away here apart from plastic bloody bags. They get them repaired. You know, it's you've got tradesmen in every conceivable craft and trade you can think of. You can get anything, and they make stuff. Or as Richard Field found when he came on a visit to us on his motorbike, he got an unusual motorbike. It had no electronics on it, quite a thing. But he wanted it serviced for when he was riding on, and we took it to a guy on this Sana'i in this tin pot little farming town that we live adjacent to. And the guy said, "Oh, yes," he said, "Oh, my word, that's a Suzuki so-and-so. And Richard looked at him in amazement because nobody he knew what they were. And so the guy got it serviced. It took a few days longer because he had to get special parts sent down by cargo from Istanbul. But you can get anything done here, anything repaired. That culture has gone from much of the so-called developed Western world. And that's another aspect that will change dramatically, I think, with a socialist society. Things what you won't have the throwaway concept. Things will be repaired, and it'll be, the world will be the better place for it.
Not only will they be repaired, but things won't be built with built-in obsolescence. You know, things are built not to last, because otherwise you won't buy a new one. And I'm just thinking about things being repaired, Alan, I'm just thinking, well, actually, shops will be pretty small then, won't they, really? Because once you've got something, hopefully it's going to last for a hell of a lot longer. And if things do go wrong, then, you know, you go to your local repairman, a guy that can repair things like fridges and ovens and stuff like this. And you know, so I reckon that we'll have all this time because, you know, we won't have to be producing all these machines, all these white goods. We won't be producing that many. So I reckon that the shops, that if there are shops, are going to be pretty small. And once you've got something, and also talking about crafts, I was also thinking, well, yeah, that's great having craft shops, but then there is a limit to how much stuff, even if it's beautiful, that you want in your home. So, yeah, it's a whole different concept. You know, it's not going to be a consumer society. I think we'll be content with very little, actually.
Yeah, the planet will. If the planet is still putting up with us, by the time we have this wonderful socialist world, it's going to benefit enormously from, producing stuff at the scale that we do it now, where you, as you say, built-in obsolescence, or replacing everything with concrete. Concrete is a huge polluter. There's so many things that will be better when the human world is scaled back down to, let's call it, to a human level.
Are we talking about kind of village and small towns?
Well, yeah, here we're certainly here. I mean, we still steer well clear of large metropolitan areas as much as we can. Yeah, we live in rural communities. When we go into town, these are invariably, you will call them small agricultural towns. They support the local farming community, which in the main is not factory farming. It's not huge agricultural projects. You know, companies running the place. It's small individuals who need to be able to purchase their bits and bobs to do their repairs, or to they put their own pipes in. They need to get their agricultural machinery repaired. You can get it done. I mean, if not at a village level, you can certainly get it by going into the nearest small town, and this is what people do.
No need for big cities. You know, why are there big cities? Big cities are where people come to work, to be wage slaves, basically. We don't need big cities. Obviously, I think a lot of people don't want to be isolated either. They don't want to live in some little tiny village. But there is a happy medium. Small towns, but so long as... You know, the towns will have everything you need there. You know, it won't be one where we can't afford a cinema or we can't afford a theatre because not as many people can't afford, that you can't get enough people to go because you've got to survive selling tickets. That won't happen. So we could have all the facilities, but within a much smaller area.
I think it's also, Carla, recognising that a village. I mean, I'm talking about Turkey, but this is throughout much of the world. Villages in places like here and are nothing at all like villages when we lived in a village in Kent, and it was largely populated by people from London who bought a second home. It was people came in with money and dictated about, well, you can't, they complained about the chickens crowing in the morning or something like that. There is no comparison. And it's really, you can't look at a village in let's say the UK where you guys are and compare it with a village here in Turkey. There's just no, they're just different. They're vastly different. Here, People still talk to each other. Neighbours talk to each other. They're working in their field. They'd be sitting down on their arse in the field, planting carrots or whatever it is they're planting, and they'd be shouting to somebody several fields away, carrying on a conversation. They stop more often for a glass of tea and a chat. And as vast numbers of them smoke out here and damage their health that way, they stop for a cigarette. It's a much more sociable place than any village you can pick on in the UK.
Just returning to the point about Al made about, you know, recycling stuff and repairing stuff. Capitalism actually seems to be moving in that direction itself more and more. Just lately, with it seems to be moving away from throwaway culture because of the environmental pressures. In fact, I understand that. In fact, Steve might be able to confirm this or not. That there's a law against built-in obsolescence now in France. How strictly it's observed, I don't know. But just on another tack, cinemas and I think Steve wants to say something. Go on.
No, I mean, I can't confirm that, not immediately. But, yeah, I mean, everything that's been said so far about the way that goods will be produced, I mean, is absolutely right. And also, the way that goods are distributed, there's no reason why you'd have to go to this idea of supermarkets with everything on the shelves. The reason they got supermarkets is that they have to get rid of, in part, was to get rid of workers. So you've now got stuff stuck onto shelves in quantities that you don't want necessarily. So that ends up with huge amounts of waste, and you end up with this sterile environment where you're just walking about zombie-like, following the psychology, what's been dictated by shopping psychology, rather than having being able to talk to somebody behind the counter and saying, yeah, could I have three roll plugs rather than 1,500 weights of the fucking things, which is what you tend to end up with these days. But I also think that what Carl was saying is right, that would be good. It's probably more what Paddy was saying, that the home should be somewhere to sleep. Like Thatcher said, you go home when you've nothing else to do. And she was a right gobshite, but in certain respects, she was right. That you don't need the level of equipment that we have these days in houses. You know, I was just looking around the stuff that I've got, which is just I've got an iron. I mean, I've used an iron once in the last 3 months, so that's an iron and an ironing board. I've got ridiculously expensive hi-fi. Instead of being able to go out and listen to a band playing in Paddy's open music space, I sit here with a fucking ridiculously expensive, resource-hungry bit of equipment, which I might use 5% of the time. And people have now got 25-foot television screens in the house. Instead of going, yeah, hang on, well, couldn't we just go to somewhere a bit more sociable, like a screening room? I think that houses in a socialist society would be so bloody different. You just wouldn't want to be cluttered with all this fucking nonsense that we have these days, including, I think, kitchens. You know, is it not absolutely ridiculous? I've got a toaster. I've got a fucking bread maker. I've got a microwave oven. Hang on. I mean, this it's just an absolutely ridiculous waste of resources. And we've got to get rid of this idea. But basically, unfortunately, whenever we start talking about this, we do get into this thing. We are people that have grown up as wage slaves. We've got a wage slave mentality, and we can't possibly we can't possibly legislate for what people are going to be like in socialism. I think the only thing that we can say in a socialist society is that we're not going to be walking down street after street with these fucking shutters down, which make everything, it's as though we're living in cages, or we're outside of the cages, and then they're trapping us in a way. So purely on a visual level, you're not going to have that in a socialist society. Oh, shut up, mate.
Probably on the same token, you wouldn't have lighting all night in all these closed shops either, would you?
Absolutely. That's a nice image, Steve. No shutters. Open shops, really. Open areas, shops, whatever we're going to call them. But you're not taking away my kitchen.
I want to take away your kitchen. I want to take away your garden. I want to take away your hi-fi.
You can piss off.
I'm going to butt in here, you know, because it's like, yeah, you don't want a garden, you don't want a kitchen. That's absolutely fine. But just imagine when the planning of new sites, because obviously, you know, we can't pull everything down and start from scratch. We've got to use what we've got. It might mean people moving from one place to another, different places in all different kinds of ways. But that you could, when you're planning new areas or new whatever, that it's going to be planned by the community, isn't it? By people, not by somebody who's paid to do it, to get the best contract for some kind of, you know, whoever the builder is and the organizer and whatnot, but it's going to be according to what people want. So if you don't want a garden, you don't go and live with a garden. I mean, maybe you're quite happy to live in a multi-story something. Some people are. It's horses for courses, and I think that's what it's going. It's really difficult to get our heads around the huge number of different ways that things can be. From the very bottom, very smallest thing to the biggest. And it's exciting to think of it like that.
Yeah, no, but by the way, John, when I said I want to get your gardens, it's for people to have this wonderful public gardens where we can all work together, we can all learn things. You know, walking about where I live, you see people just like, they've got these little patches of garden and they're just full of weeds. And, yeah. It just seems crazy that we've got this late 19th century idea. If you think about the port sunlight idea, are you familiar with that? Which is designed on behalf of Lord Lever Hume, the Lever brothers, chemical soap powders and stuff like that. They brought up this idea of as a vast improvement on the slums that mainly were around at the time, is that an individual garden with a hedge and a house with a kitchen. Yeah, they're a great idea, but it's this atomization of society that obviously capitalism wants to keep going, wants to keep us in these little consumer units rather than anything more expansive. And yeah, I quite agree. But once we've got an established socialist society, which I'm not going to see now, but once it is established, I'm sure that there will not be the idea of I want my private garden. It would have to be a public space.
Yeah, I can imagine that the idea of that there's also an atomization of the role of spaces. I mean, the concept of modern rooms, you know, a particular room for a particular purpose, is quite new, actually. It didn't really start until the sort of early Victorian time. And I think that the idea of socialization of space would be a big part of the socialist project, so that you wouldn't, this idea of private spaces I think would not disappear, but I think it would decline. And I also think that the idea of a garden would change as well. You can make anything into a garden. In New York, they have things called pocket parks. In some cities, they have pocket parks. Some of these parks are due to bomb damage during the war, and they didn't rebuild on certain lots. They just turned them into small parks. I can imagine parks being everywhere. I can imagine even gardens being even in multi-story flats. You could have multi-story gardens. Where I live, we don't have gardens. We have yards, and most of the yards have got flat roof extensions. Well, you could have gardens on top of those extensions. So you can create your gardens upwards. So I would imagine a breaking down of the sort of the separation of roles between rooms and houses and gardens. I imagine that all being kind of blurred, really, so that a house becomes a garden and a garden becomes a living space. Just wanted to ask another question, sort of unrelated to this. We mentioned earlier the idea of cinema and theatre, and it's always been a fascination for me about what cinema in particular, what would it actually show? If you think about what cinema films are today, what the film industry is about today, well, it's all really about the miseries of capitalism and the struggles people have within capitalism, with all its heroic epics featuring the lone hero. These are completely capitalist constructs that wouldn't exist in socialism. And I have an abiding interest in figuring out what socialist film would be about. I mean, apart from historical epics, I just can't think what people would make films about.
That's true, Paddy. Actually, I'm just thinking that myself, thinking, well, exactly what will we make films about? Probably nothing. Oh, we make films about, I don't know, educational films. Boring.
Yeah, like the BBC or something.
Yeah.
No, we have arty stuff and realism and being creative. I don't really know, but apart from it's more surreal, not even apart from that, I don't really know, history.
Yes, we'll learn to socialise again. What about that?
Yeah, that was my thinking, is that, well, maybe the desire to go in a dark room, in a large group, and watch something on a very large two-dimensional screen. Maybe people just wouldn't want to do that. Well, what would be the point? Real life is far more entertaining in socialism, I would think. So, yeah, maybe we just wouldn't have cinemas.
To watch reruns of Star Trek, I mean, that's a moneyless society, isn't it?
just on similar idea, yeah. When you think about it, when did crosswords come into being? They came into being once people were travelling to work on the train, and somebody thought, "Oh, this is a good idea. This is a good distraction for people." So we'll have them. The Japanese can't do that. So hang on, we'll invent Sudoku to while away people's time as they go into their equally meaningless jobs. So you can see that this type of technology, this type of so-called cultural activity would disappear, and possibly the same thing with music. You know, would we be in the situation of having virtuosi investing a lot of time and energy into creating virtuosi, or would we go back to a more communal form of music, which doesn't rely on this sort of that sort of level of ability? Again, modern music is a very recent thing.
Yeah, I agree with that, Steve. I think that's absolutely right. I think I've lost count of the number of people who've said things like, "Oh, I couldn't ever play an instrument. Oh, I can't sing. Oh, I've got no sense of rhythm." I mean, people in ancient societies never worried about whether they had a sense of rhythm. They learned it when they were babies, and they picked it up. and they joined in, and music was something that you did communally. And it's only really in modern times, like, as you say, you know, capitalism has turned music into a consumable commodity that you have to be a real expert and concentrate and spend years and years training at. In its ridiculous way, like footballers do, and this kind of thing. They've turned it into this absurd commodity, this money-making machine that the rest of us just sit there and consume and don't take any part of. I think it's absolutely criminal, really, what capitalism does to the arts and also the sports, you know, all these kind of activities that we now watch and pay for instead of doing.
Okay, I get the thing about the cinema. Yeah, I get that. But what about theatre? What about dance? You know, people want to go to concerts. People will still want to see other people. Not everyone can dance or want to dance. There are loads of other art forms that we could, as concerts. Okay, I'll get the cinema, because what would you make films about? But, you know, theatre and ballet and dance and... I think that would still be something that people would want to take part in or do or watch.
Are you seriously suggesting what? that it's a really good idea to have these elite dancers destroying the bodies?
But they won't be elite.
If you're going to be a ballet dancer, for example, there is no way that you can be a lady ballet dancer and not doing something that's detrimental to your health, whether it be in terms of your physiology or whether it be in terms of bone density.
Quite true.
You know, it's not really a great idea, is it? But it's something which is now deemed to be a useful thing to do. Oh, it's harmful to the individual.
Well, not necessarily, Steve. Not necessarily. No. Performances. If you do too many performances, that's different. And ballet, perhaps classical ballet, but modern dance doesn't harm you. Doesn't harm you.
I've got an ex-stage dancer, and he's got physical problems. All right. I mean, if you're talking about more social problems, then I'll accept it. You're arguing my view, but these elite things, you know, particularly when it comes to women, you know, you look what we had in these elite gymnasts from the Soviet Union, was it Nadia Comaneci? I can't remember. There was another absolutely wonderful little girl. Gymnast, and they've ended up in fucking wheelchairs because they were trained to do this elite stuff.
Can I just say something about cinema? I mean, at the moment in this society, people watch films from the 50s and the 30s and stuff. I think people will still watch films in socialism that were made under capitalism, and I think people will still like to watch them. Right? And I don't think because socialism will be a lot freer, a nicer society, that people still want to watch films about what happened before socialism or whatever. If you see what I mean, just as people like historical dramas and things, you know.
I must say, I had that idea, Dougie, of making historical you know how people like doing historical reenactment? Well, they'll go in a field and they'll... You know,
yeah, I had a friend that did that.
Yeah. I know somebody who does it. He does. He dresses up in Roman outfit as part of the 20th Legion, and they go around, you know, being very Roman and everything. I think that might be quite fun. People would do that, and imagine filming a sort of giant epic, you know, reenact giant battles or something. I can imagine that might be quite fun. But I think you're right. Obviously, that. People might still like to watch some of the old films, but new films, the older that socialism got, the more irrelevant those things would become. They would become kind of historical curiosities that only, you know, really interested researchers would probably want to see. Sorry, Malcolm, what?
Would sci-fi not still exist, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Could do. But, I mean, if you look at the themes in science fiction, they're very capitalist themes, like every other genre, you know. They're really another way to look at capitalism.
I think it depends who you're reading. You know, Banks is hardly capitalist.
What about you?
Looking backward, 2000 wasn't exactly capitalist. I think it may be harder to find themes.
Might you not see a return of things like travelling theatre groups and travelling fairgrounds, you know, that sort of thing. We used to see when we were, well, some we used to see when we were kids. What about that?
Oh, I think that's a fabulous idea.
Yeah, in the Middle Ages, when villages had no real communication, there used to be travelling bands of minstrels who would, apart from... sort of doing things like doing juggling acts and things like that. In fact, the French juggler also means minstrel, and they would bring the news, and often they would set the they would deliver the news in the form of songs and things like this. I'm not suggesting that that would happen in socialism, but I can imagine a sort of social role for these kind of travelling itinerant entertainers, a bit like the circus, but probably not with the animals.
One of the things that I notice is how, as society has become more technological, more sophisticated, if you like, so we've been conditioned to that we have to accept everything has to be incredibly technical, advanced, realistic, even fiction, even you know, gunfights and God knows what else, they have to be totally realistic. It seems to me that when you look back at when some of us, you know, after the war, when we were kids, during the war, you know, when radio was coming in, and you look back to theatres were full of people who appreciated, they loved, they enjoyed a simpler form of humour. I don't know. I'm not expressing myself very well, but life was simpler. It wasn't so complicated.
The best way that I have ever embarrassed my children was at a pantomime, because I was there going, "He's behind you," and my kids are looking at me going, "What are you doing, Dad?" You know, so. I think in part you're right there, Alan, because I can remember as a kid going to these local productions of pantomimes, and they've all gone now. You don't have these and that's what I was talking about, these participatory activities. Yeah, absolutely daft, but you know, like sing songs and things like that you just wouldn't get anymore. I don't know if you've ever been to one of these modern really, really horribly sterile, whereas before they used to get kids up onto stage and say, "Go on, sing us a song and we'll give you something to rot your teeth." You know, it's all now people who've been on "I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here" or something like that.
Yeah, I think something Alan said also about, just going back to the gunfights have to be realistic for a minute. Yeah, it's all about capitalism, just trying to find the next thrill, you know, upping the ante all the time with all this sort of thing. And also video games. And I can't help thinking that socialists in an established socialist society, maybe second or third generation, would never watch that stuff because they'd be horrified by it. They would just see it as a violence porn. And if they saw it, they would just think, "Jesus, these kids." Well, they wouldn't say Jesus, but they would think these people were so disturbed and fucked up.
I wonder about going to pantomimes and all the rest as well. When I was younger,
it didn't matter.
Stayed in Glasgow, when they built big ships, some of the big ships, it would be massive crowds that turn out to see the big ships, and I did Springburn and the bulk train. And when they built a new train, the whole of the area Springburn would turn out to kind of seal off the new trains. I suppose if you were producing things in a socialist society, it might be kind of return to Ray. That kind of thing as well. I mean, if you build something that the people think is worthwhile or whatever, people would go and make it a mere communal event again.
I think that's a really good point, actually, Malcolm, and it's something that we haven't sort of touched on, that the socialisation of work, the communalisation of work, would be, as you say, you know, every time something was created, you know, it's a reason for a bit of a celebration and a get-together. And I can imagine there being a lot of reasons for parties, a lot of socialist ritual, maybe around the seasons, just any excuse really. The rituals we have now, the capitalist rituals, I think would either disappear or be kind of repurposed. You know, say I remember having a discussion once about Christmas with some socialists. Some people thought it would stay, some people thought it would disappear, but arguably it would just be repurposed into its or reverted back into its original sort of solstice kind of form. So I think people would along with the kind of social process of work would be all sorts of reasons for celebrations about new things that are built, or just kind of the turn of the seasons.
I'll be kind of thinking that as well about churches without religion. We'd all go and, I don't know, give praise to the sun or whatever, just to be together and be sociable or whatever. Kind of an atheist church.
Yeah, we forgot about churches, didn't we? They weren't mentioned. Of course, obviously, they're not going to exist. I mean, obviously, old buildings will be repurposed. But there certainly won't be churches, will there?
Yeah, I suppose you could probably make them into galleries and museums and things like that. They're probably quite good for that kind of thing.
I used to love ringing the bells and playing the organ. I'm sure we could, we could use all that lot as well. Bell ringing is a wonderful sport, a skill, and there would be people who would like to do it still. But I accept you about the thing about the church, of course. The religion is going to be bypassed. Yes, there could be some useful buildings. And organ craft, that, now there you go. Without, there's so many beautiful organs, fabulous instruments, but they are so expensive to look after. Now think about the people who just love taking care of organs, building organs, and it's an incredible skill. That's something else that could have a new life.
Yeah, that just makes me think of Johann Sebastian Bach. And going back to an earlier question that Steve asked, you know, would we have these kind of musical virtuosos, or is it virtuosi? I'm not sure. When there's no economic need for it. But I think that there's always going to be the Bachs and the Mozarts and the Beethovens. I think there are always going to be people out there who are just exceptional at whatever it is. And, socialism will give them the space to learn to become, you know, what they want to become. So I do think that there will be times when we'll do music collectively, maybe even painting, artistic things together. But I think there will be times when somebody will come around, maybe on a visit, who is just so exceptional that we'll probably want a theatre to see this person in action. I can imagine that being the case.
Yeah, I was watching a Japanese artist. He kind of does manga-like stuff. I can't remember his name. It's a little complicated name. But I think there'd be more stuff like that, watching artists at work and maybe learning from them.
Can you imagine more sharing for different different continents, the sharing of music, art, all the different sort of kinds of art, you know, sculpture, painting, whatever you like, music. When it, you know, I understand what you say when you're talking about it being elitist, but it shouldn't have to be elitist. I think that's what could make it different. There's no reason why anybody shouldn't learn to play any instrument if that's what they want to do. And however far they get with it, it's up to them. There's no competition. It's not like we have a competition because we're not going to see who can make the most from playing it around the world. It's for one's own satisfaction, one's own. You set your own goals, and to reach your own goals is a wonderful achievement.
Yeah, I mean, going on from that, if you think about the choirs and the brass bands that were associated with the mining communities around the UK. I mean, what fabulous music they produced, and these are just ordinary workers with a desire to do something and, if you like, become exceptional, because the quality of some of these choirs and bands are just staggering. I mean, one would hesitate to say they were professional, but they were as good as any professional, you know, group could ever be.
I think I might have overstated my case. I didn't mean to denigrate people that wanted to do that. In fact, I would argue that this idea of musical genius, quite possibly in a couple of cases in the past, has been true. But for example, in Venezuela, before everything went completely to pot, they had this thing, I think it's called the system, whereby they took music training into slums where kids could never ever afford any instruments, and they've created some absolutely wonderful orchestras. It's just that I should have put more stress on this idea of music becoming a more communal activity. And when would we necessarily, we wouldn't necessarily just consume it as spectators or listeners. But I still want to have ballet dancers.
Yeah, something else I think we didn't touch on was schools. That's a whole area by itself. But I mean, you know, briefly, I imagine that schools as institutions, you know, as built environments, wouldn't be used. Children would find the people in the community that they wanted to learn things from, and they sort of attach themselves like little goslings, maybe following the goose, and learning off whoever they wanted to learn from. So one part of being an adult in socialism, I imagine, would be being a teacher, being a tutor. This is something that probably most adults would find themselves doing at some point. And that goes for musicians as well. They would find that they had children wanting to learn from them.
If education is, as I would see it in a socialist, education would literally be for life, and I'm talking about education in its broadest sense. So, I mean, if you have a young person who, they need to learn a few basic things as early as possible. There are social skills and the ability to communicate and so on that are necessary for growing up. But there will come a point possibly where conventional schooling maybe is boring and little Johnny or little Janet wants to go off and be an electrical engineer or something. So you say, well, okay, well, off you go. Go and see George down at his workshop. And, you know, he's a electrical craftsman. And yet, so the child would, you know, the young person would go there and begin learning the practicalities of what they want to do. But at some point, George, the craftsman, is going to turn around to this person and say, look, if you really do want to pursue this being an electrical engineer and really understanding all that you need to do, you've really got to brush up on your math skills, for example. And so because education is for life, this young person would go back to a class to learn what they needed to learn at that time. And this could apply to everybody of any age. You want to learn a new skill, To do that, why not? Why shouldn't education be a lifetime journey?
I've got severe doubts about that idea, because as a society, we would have to make a decision that, first of all, we need so many surgeons, we need so many builders, electrical engineers, and what have you. I don't think you could leave it up to some seven-year-old thinking, oh, I'd quite like to be an electrical engineer. I think it's be far more. There'd have to be a damn sight more planning and a certain amount of social.
I think you're thinking of it in terms of quotas that only really apply in capitalism. I mean, it's only capitalism that has to worry about how many builders there are, how many plumbers there are, because it affects the market for those things. If there's too many plumbers, as in fact we've seen in the past, plumbers' rates go right down. But in socialism, you know, if you had too many, what does too many plumbers mean? It means just look, you've got lots and lots of people who enjoy doing plumbing. Well, so what? If you had too many surgeons, what does that mean?
If there are too few, that's the issue.
Yeah, I think it would be a problem if you had too few. So I'm not disagreeing entirely. I think there would need to be some sort of oversight to make sure that essential skills weren't being overlooked. Yeah,
I think Schools as they are now would definitely disappear. I mean, the whole point of school is to get children used to appearing at the gates at a certain time and leaving at a certain time to be a compliant wage slave, basically.
See
you go back to, there's that bit, I think it's in Capital somewhere, where Marx was talking about one day I would be a writer and the next day I would be, I can't remember what it is, he says, a joiner or whatever. So, I mean, I think in socialism, you're free to pursue whatever interests you want, and that goes, I think that goes for children as much as it goes for adults.
One of the things I imagine in our sort of virtual high street is a kind of, not a job centre exactly, but a place where if you want something to do, this is where you go to find out what needs doing in the community. But not just in the community. It could be in the wider area, in the region, even across different countries, different areas of the world. And that's where you'd find out, that's the nexus for finding out what skills gaps there are. And I think people, my suspicion, and I can't prove this with a calculator or anything, my suspicion is that there would be an actual shortage of highly skilled things to do, because so many people would be able to do them, would be interested in doing them. And so there would be a demand for things that were in demand. So if you go into this, call it a job shop or something, and say, what needs doing? And the answer is, well, we're actually really short of plumbers at the moment in this area. And you've got nothing to do, nothing better to do, and you want to learn something, and you want to learn something that's socially useful. It's a really key thing, isn't it? And you go, right, hey, I'll learn to be a plumber in that case. And that's how you do it.
So capitalism has caused people to specialise and have one career and have one vocation. It's caused people to specialise and they become very experienced. I'm a bit concerned that if everybody wants to do a bit of this and a bit of that, that we'll all be jack of all trades and master of none. And we'll all be mediocre and not excel at anything.
I think we are anyway. I think we're all jack of all trades anyway. And the thing that we get paid to do very often is something that we just pretend to be good at. Well, that's generally been my experience anyway.
Well, you can't say that about surgeons and doctors and people like this. All right, not, you know, there are bad surgeons, there are bad doctors, but you know, certain things take a hell of a long time. You know, it's not just something you fancy doing for this week.
Yeah, that's a good point. You're right.
I think you still have to be sort of specialists that spend particular things, brain surgery and all that. Can't you just walk in the street and start cutting somebody's brain up or whatever? But I mean, just because people are jumping from job to job, but I still think there'll be people that stick at the same job more or less through their life, learn the necessary skills. You see, it takes a long time.
Yeah, and there would be a certification process, wouldn't there, necessarily? I mean, you don't want just anybody getting in a plane and flying it. And as you point out, surgery and brain surgery, which then the certification process kind of presupposes a sort of fairly centralised college system, doesn't it? So I think beyond our high street, we are talking about regional colleges, places where once you've learned what you can at the local electrical craftsperson's place, that person then says to you, right, okay, if you want to take this further, you need to go to college. So I can imagine that's out there as well.
But as well as that, there'd have to be some sort of there will be some sort of social mechanism whereby we. Society makes its members each other aware of the fact that we've got these requirements for X number of hydrologists or what have you, and sort of make sure that there was encouragement into those sorts of jobs.
Well, we didn't.
Be damn sight best than what we've got now, which is you go to this education factory, which is this training factory, better said, isn't it, rather than education, because what Malcolm was saying is absolutely right. You just go and you talk to stand up and sit down at certain times, eat your dinner at a certain time, go home at a certain time. Just ready for the factories, which of course the ruling class don't get to the kids, and they never have done.
Well, one thing on the high street that we've overlooked is the news agent. Think about what's in a news agent. I mean, forget the tobacco for a minute, but think about the magazines, think about the newspapers, think about news. What kind of news would people want to read? There'd be specialist magazines, I imagine. You know, there'd be magazines on. For the various specialist skills so that people could read up about it, science magazines, that sort of thing. Lots and lots of things. Not at all the kind of magazines we see today, but still quite a lot. And access to news, I think, would be quite a crucial part of the socialisation process. So I think people would be fairly clued up about what's going on in the world and the various needs and challenges in it.
Oh, yeah. But it would have to be organised. Some 7-year-old kid is going, I'll go and do some electrical engineering. It seems a little bit airy-fairy to me now. So you're going to have these structures around it.
So you're saying forget about tobacco. I can never forget about it, but talking of tobacco, what about drink shops? And then obviously with socialism, there's no going to be ridiculous restrictions on drug use. So is there going to be shops that you can go into to get hash or mushrooms or...
Now you're talking.
Drugs are and alcohol is used as an escapism in capitalist society. I think they wouldn't be used like that. They would be used for recreational purposes to enhance moods or I don't know. But I don't think, things like alcoholism and drug addiction, I think they would eventually... They would die out. Why you don't need to escape? You won't need to escape from society. You know, you have what you need.
I mean, always escapism. I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
No, I agree with what you're saying. Basically, I mean, in the capitalist society, most of it is used for escapist purposes. But a lot of psychedelics aren't used for kind of exploring whatever you want to explore when you're using them.
I mean, escapism is a sort of recreation. anyone who's ever been on mushrooms knows it's a very sort of escapist kind of recreation, which you don't have to be running away from. You don't have to be running away from society in order to enjoy drugs, and enjoy the escapism in them. So,
Sometimes you can be very creative as well, apart from just the creative process, or not just totally. Fair enough, for most people, there's a bit of escapism. For a lot of people, there an aid to the creative process, and all this new stuff we're talking about, psilocybin, it's very good for depression. That's bloody obvious. I mean, it's been obvious for years to me. So the Irish people are just suddenly latching on to it now.
And at least drugs won't be adulterated. You know, they won't be full. They won't be filled out with shit. At least, you know, the drugs that you will get, you know, not going to kill you.
Yeah, the real stuff. That's a good point.
So pot shops, yeah.
Well, I imagine them as part of cafes, really, like you get in Amsterdam, yeah.
Opium dens.
What was that, Malcolm?
Opium dens. Victorian London was full of them, wasn't it? Opium dens and prostitution.
No knocking shops.
Yeah, I don't think there'll be much call for either.
Well, it more likely be hard to find anyone to staff them.